completes our brief introductions, and we can move on to the first agenda item with an update on diverse relation with Kristen.
Oh, yep, that's fine. Right.
This one.
And then this one. So just agenda paper one, and I'm going to give you an update of the IFRS taxonomy and our current and future activities. So in terms of the aim of this presentation is to give you an update of the recent activities of what the IFRS taxonomy team has been doing, and then maybe answer any questions that you might have on those activities. And I think also to seek your views on if there's anything more that we should be doing or adding to our work plan. In terms of what we'll cover, so first of all, we'll look at what we've completed in the last 6 months, so the last since the last face-to-face meeting. Give you a bit of an update on what we've done in terms of maintaining and developing the IFRS taxonomy. A bit about the IFRS taxonomy due process, because that continues to develop and change. And then also a bit of an update on some of the other things we've been doing in terms of jurisdictional profiles, our intellectual property, some data modelling and educational materials we've been developing. So let's move first to activities completed since in the last 6 months, which the slide deck moves a bit slower than my thinking does. Here we go. So the activities we've completed since May 2014. I think the first is that we have issued a proposed IFRS taxonomy update, and we've done that for both IFRS 15 on revenue from contracts with customers and for common practice in the areas of transport and pharmaceuticals. They went out in August, and the comment deadline was the 20th of October. We've had some, but not a lot of comments back, but I think what we have found is they have been very useful documents in terms of describing what we have done to the taxonomy, in particular for revenue, and have provided a template for how we will move forward. In terms of educational materials, we've also issued a guide to understanding the IFRS taxonomy update and a more shorter sort of one-page slide or deck, which gives you a sense of what the terminology we use in those IFRS taxonomy updates. Now, I think that's going to be very useful when we actually send some of these proposed updates to accounting people, in particular, say, board members. Just last night, we issued a pre-ballot draft for our exposure draft on I-7, and I'll come back to that later. But we attached with that a link to how to read these IFRS taxonomy updates, and also, importantly, that one-page document to give somebody who's not used to IFRS terminology something to refer to when they're trying to read these type of documents. They're both all on our website too, if you want to have a look at them. And I think you've had comments on what we actually had in those documents. The last is some translations that we've put out. We've published the labels in Arabic, and we've also actually now just also issued our Spanish translation. And that was done, I think, a couple of days ago. So moving on to taxonomy. Taxonomy releases, what's up and coming. So those that are going to impact the IFRS taxonomy in 2014, as you can see, we have agriculture and bearer plants, and that had one element that basically allowed certain bearer plants to be carried at a cost rather than a fair value. I think the significant change and the significant things we'll have to do to the IFRS taxonomy will be around IFRS 9, and Bartek this afternoon is going into a lot more detail about what the issues we're seeing with how we should reflect that standard in the taxonomy. We also had two other amendments, developments which made very small amendments to the IFRS taxonomy. The first was the equity method in separate financial statements that was published in August, and also our annual improvements are coming up as well for publication. They're going to have some very small amendments to the IFRS taxonomy, so I won't go into detail about those. But if I move on to 2015, I think we've got some bigger things coming up, which is the first one here is the IFRS for SMEs review, and that will obviously mean quite a significant review of the module that we have on IFRS for SMEs in the IFRS taxonomy. I think the two really big ones here are going to be leases and insurance contracts. Now, at the moment, I think they're planned to come out sometime in 2015. I would expect that means that the updates and proposed amendments to the IFRS taxonomy will follow that, so maybe more looking like 2016. They will take a significant amount of work, and they will have significant disclosure requirements, and I think the board, I'm looking at the board members, are actually currently debating some of those disclosure requirements, particularly in leases at the moment. The other ones here, I think the fair value measurement on unit account, I suspect that's going to be very limited impact on the taxonomy. The next one, reconciliation of financing liabilities, I will talk a bit more about that when we talk to due process, but that's an interesting one. That's the one that we're balloting at the moment, so the board is looking at the proposed exposure draft for the first time. And we've included in that the proposed IFRS taxonomy update. So there's actually a section in there which describes how those amendments to the disclosures about reconciliation of financing or liabilities or cash flows arising from liabilities from financing will be reflected in the taxonomy, and we tried to describe that in the exposure draft. It attaches to the exposure draft, and we've actually got a question at the front of the exposure draft relating to that IFRS taxonomy update. So that's kind of going to be a first step for us to actually try and more align the developments or changes to the IFRS taxonomy with the changes as they develop in the standards. The next two items here are macro hedge accounting. That's a discussion paper. I'm not sure the time. I suspect that's going to be a bit of time away before we get something final that will be hitting the IFRS taxonomy. I think the comments finished a couple of weeks ago, and they've had about 100 or so responses to that discussion paper, and I think the board's yet to get an analysis of what those responses were. And then finally, rate regulated activities, that's still out for discussion and being, I think, we're seeking outreach at the moment on that. I'm looking at Amara because I think you've got a trip to Brazil, I think, next week to discuss it.
No, 1 month's time.
I move now to the common practice content, and in 2014 we published the IFRS taxonomy update on transport and pharmaceuticals. That was in the slide I previously spoke to. We're also proposing a common practice update for utilities, information technology, media and chemicals. We're looking to get an ED in Q4 2014, but actually I think the second side of that is Q1 2015 is more likely. When I go into a bit about the due process, I'll give you a bit more detail about why that timeline's shifting out. And then finally, retail. We've been doing some work on reviewing retail activities, and we're still hoping to have an ED sometime, hopefully in Q1 2015, for common practice on retail. If I move to quickly to translations. So in terms of translation developments, what we have done is made some changes to how we ask people for how they'd like their taxonomy translated. So now entities will have, or jurisdictions will have, the option to have documentation labels included or translated if they would like to. I think historically they've always remained in English. And also you could opt to only translate a certain module. So if you didn't want IFRS for SMEs translated, you could just have the full IFRS taxonomy translated instead. The labelled link bases are backward compatible to 2009, so that means you don't have to update ones that haven't changed, so the technology and structure remains the same, so you only have to update where there has been amendments since your last version of the taxonomy. And then we have had some delays in translating some of the IFRS taxonomy, and that's really due to the fact that the people who do our translations also translate the standards, and there's been some big standards coming through this year, IFRS 9, IFRS 15 on revenue, so it means that there's been a bit of a backlog. But as I mentioned earlier, the Spanish translation has now been published. The next slide just summarises what translations we have available and the current status of the last update. Move forward now to due process. If you do have any questions, do let me know.
Oh yeah. Can you tell me a little bit, explain to me, how do you select, say, which languages to be translated? How is this process to taken care of?
Is that the request of the jurisdiction to do that? So we will automatically do, I think, Spanish, something we'll do here internally, but the rest is at the request of the jurisdiction. So they approach our translations team and we then handle it from there. It often gets caught or is part of the discussion about translation of IFRS more generally, and we like to have that discussion as part of that process as well.
Okay. And is the translation done by IFRS Foundation?
They actually get somebody to do it, but then it's approved effectively by the IFRS Foundation. Is that correct, Alan? You don't know.
Most of our translation is done. We don't actually do the translations ourselves in IFRS, for example. What we do is we set up a system that we're comfortable with that we can approve. So that means that we review there's usually a committee that reviews the translation to make sure that it's an appropriate translation, and we review those processes as opposed to doing them ourselves.
So we don't have like 10 translators downstairs doing the various...
So the translation is done by the jurisdictions, if I understand?
They're driven by the jurisdictions at the request of the jurisdictions.
Except the Spanish, right?
Because the Spanish
there are so many countries that speak Spanish, so we have a team of voluntary, and this is coordinated by one Spanish from the University of Valencia, if I'm not wrong. But this is approved, and you have people from almost a number of countries.
I'll move on to
the IFRS conference. Please enter your PIN number followed by hash. Please state your name and then press the hash key.
IFRS.
IFRS. Has joined the conference.
So just moving on to the IFRS taxonomy due process, as you we discussed, I think, in the last face-to-face meeting, we are undertaking two trials to move forward with the strategic change in aligning the IFRS taxonomy development more with standard settings. So the first trial is how we process new or amended IFRS into the taxonomy. And as I mentioned earlier, the sort of significant part of that is to step in that is to issue an exposure draft which contains a description of how we've amended the IFRS taxonomy. So as I said, that's going through approval stage for the board and should be published before the end of the year. And that was for the upcoming ED on amendments to IS7. But as part of that, we have had discussions with the board. So in preparing that exposure draft, we firstly had education sessions with the board. We actually had a public session to discuss the proposed amendments that we're making to the up-and-coming ED on IS7. So we've been following the due process that you would to develop a standard very closely to line up with the way we amend the IFRS taxonomy. I think what this slide also indicates is that we continue to interact, the taxonomy team and the technical teams when developing standards have done for a long time, interact on how the wording about disclosures are developed and what they say in an exposure draft and a final standard. And I think that's being enhanced by the fact that we're having to draft together and actually coordinate sections. So a lot of the considerations that you may have when you're developing a standard are actually considered when you're developing the underlying standard as you know, and also considered in the context of the taxonomy. And I think that's what this next bullet, the ITCG comments on IFRS 15 are getting at. I think there are a lot of comments here which had to do with the underlying relationships between existing elements in the taxonomy and those that were being proposed as a result of the amendments to IFRS 15 and would have actually been better had the, you know, those issues been better resolved at a point when IFRS 15 was still in the exposure draft stage, because it would actually require some sort of assessment of the underlying standard itself. So the idea of developing amendments to the taxonomy as the standard is being developed, I think, will help us deal with issues like we saw in the IFRS 15.
Can I have a question here? Yeah. What is the status of accompanying materials? What do you expect from the responses on the exposure draft with regard to those accompanying materials? Is it the proposed taxonomy part, or what's your expectations there?
What do you mean, what we'll do with the approval, or what?
Well, I mean, you are putting out an exposure draft on the standard, proposed IFRS, so it will be integrated with this exposure draft as accompanying materials. I don't understand exactly what you mean by that.
It's the status of the due process document, so an accompanying material isn't IFRS itself. It supports IFRS, accompanies it, so it has a different sort of approval, and we're going to have to assess what that approval is. But in terms of how we've structured it for the IS7 ED, we've actually incorporated it into the one document, but separated as a section and made it clear that this accompanies the ED rather than forming part of the ED. But we have incorporated a question at the front, so it's just the third question of three. So in terms of how you would see it and approaches, I'm not sure you necessarily in terms of content see that difference. It does form a difference when you actually get to the status of the document once it's approved.
It's not a denigration of the material, because at the moment, are you familiar with our bound volumes, the red and the blue books? Okay, the thin one is our core material, and the rest is the accompanying. So when a company, a jurisdiction, builds it into regulation or endorses it, they endorse the smaller one, which is just the standards. And the accompanying material includes the basis, illustrative examples, sometimes some implementation guidance goes with that, and in this case we're saying the taxonomy updates. And so it's their supporting material, but you don't have to comply, otherwise you'd actually have to comply with the taxonomy to pursue compliance with IFRS. So that's why it's more supportive.
Okay, clear. Thank you.
We should, I think if we just consider this last bullet, I think it's a great step forward in terms of how the board is dealing with the IFRS taxonomy, and also how the public and how the outreach will be back. I agree with Alan that it will not have maybe the formal compliance aspect, but it will have a totally different impact on the stakeholders if you consider that it is actually part of the ED. So what is the view of the board members in terms of this will be now integral part of the ED, but also if you consider what will be the impact on the public in terms of consultation, in terms of the later adoption, because I think the visibility with just this last bullet,
is reaching completely new levels. So it sounds very, very easy from this perspective, but I think the impact on the board, but even more the impact on how the processes of endorsement are working in different countries across jurisdictions, it is, I think we are entering quite a new era, so we're just happy to...
That's why it's a trial. Now, to be fair, some board members have expressed some concerns that by adding this process to it, it's going to add time to the development of the standards itself. Some are concerned that, because it makes it a bigger document, and there's a concern that some people look at that and say, well, now I'm obliged to, when I reply to the standard, I have to do something on taxonomy, I don't feel qualified, I'd just rather not say anything then. So we don't want to be putting people off. Our sense is we'll actually get more people commenting on the taxonomy development updates because it'll be part of that integrated package. I'm a little nervous about the first one because if you look at the balance of the document, I think we've got a 6-page ED and a 6-page taxonomy update. I think if you looked at leases, it would be, or revenue recognition, it would be a 400-page document and probably about a 20-page update. And because the first one's a little bit complex, it's got tables in it, it looks slightly out of balance. But it's a trial. It hasn't delayed us getting the ED out, which is a good step. The next thing is whether or not it's getting the right wording for the board members to sign off on this as well, because as accompanying material, we're not saying that this is part of IFRS. What we're saying is it's consistent with IFRS and doesn't create new interpretations, essentially. But essentially, they're endorsing what we're doing as being consistent with the core standard.
It might be good at the next face-to-face to get some sense of how we think that went, maybe particularly from the board members, if they'd be able to share how they could sort of get through some of those documents.
An observation, then a question to what you raised. I find the process incredibly useful and informative, and particularly, I guess I compliment the gentleman in the corner there, who does a great job in informing the board about the words and asking questions. Did you really mean this when you suggested the following? And I think it forces the board to reflect on the words and the actual content of the disclosures. So I think it actually improves standard setting. So that's my view, but I think there are other views obviously on the table. My question is, in light of the fact that we already have an exposure draft out, I guess, in comments on IFRS 15. I was just curious, and I don't know whether, Kimberly, you have a view on this. Has the FASB done a similar type of update of their taxonomy for revenue recognition?
It's in process.
Yeah.
We've done the modeling. We haven't included it in the draft release yet because it's not effective. But we will include it either in our 2016 or 2017 update.
So similar to the standard, is your taxonomy and the IFRS taxonomy substantially the same, but for the areas where the standard differs?
I think that's a fair statement. I mean, there's some obvious differences because of more architectural differences, but in concept, they're very much alike.
Okay.
So Lewis's team and our team do talk and make sure they coordinate.
The right hand is talking to the left hand.
Good.
That's good.
Okay, Magic.
Yeah, thank you.
Go to the next trial, which is common practice, and at our September call we told you that we would be undertaking two sub-trials, one about the 2014 common practice additions that we want to make to the taxonomy, and then about the new 2015 common practice project. And we had planned to take the first board paper, so public session board paper, in November. We're now, having had some discussion with our board advisors, we think it would be better to have an education session in November, and then allowing us more time to reflect on some of the risks that might be perceived from the common practice project, in particular to what extent would an addition to the IFRS taxonomy as a result of common practice force or push people to disclose in a particular way. We also need to consider what exactly would we ask the board to approve, and would it be the actual additions, would it be the whole suite of what we've included and not included, or would it be maybe an approval on the process that was undertaken, and we need to bed that down. We also need to consider more closely what supporting materials we would need to have in order for the board and for anybody consulting responding to this, what they would need to make that decision. We're hoping then to have a board session in December to discuss that, and then following that with a proposed taxonomy update in Q1. So if I move to the next section, which is about our jurisdictional profiles. So I think the first thing to bring out is if we've slightly revised our approach to the jurisdictional profiles, and by revised I think we mean broadened. So we at the IFRS, the ISB has issued some IFRS jurisdictional profiles which give you an indication of where IFRS is used globally, and that was recently published I think at the beginning of the year. We wanted to undertake, we thought this work that we were doing on the IFRS taxonomy actually led us to think it would be good to know more generally about how IFRS financial statements are filed and used in the jurisdiction. So basically continuing the story that was developed for use of IFRS into actually how the general filing requirements for those entities in the jurisdiction. So once you produce the IFRS financial statements, what happens to it? So we've extended sort of the review to cover that broader remit. So what we've done in order to support that, we've gone out to national standard setters and asked them some free questions about their general filing requirements for those entities that adopt IFRS, both physical and electronic filing requirements. We've been also asking for contact details of organisations in charge of that electronic financial reporting and whether XBRL is used in their jurisdictions and for what purpose. So in terms of the current status, so we've sent pre-questions to those national standard setters. We have a list of national standard setters here that we contact for various things. We've used that contact base and we've received 15 responses so far. Of those, 8 jurisdictions use XBRL. Some, and the rest, as you can see, either are not using but have plans or may not have plans to do so in the future. For all those national standard setters that we contacted who use XBRL, they're basing that XBRL filing on the IFRS taxonomy in some way. Next slide. In terms of then, once we've determined who is using XBRL in the IFRS taxonomy, we're asking questionnaires or surveys particular to those filing entities, and we've only contacted, or in the pilot test we contacted Asia. This is being run out of our Asia Oceania office, this project, and so we thought the Asian jurisdictions would be a good sort of pilot test on to see whether our survey worked and whether it was we could get good responses. So as part of that pilot test, we've had responses from 3 jurisdictions in Asia, and all those jurisdictions use XBRL and the IFRS taxonomy, and we've created some profiles which we hope to publish before the end of the year. I'm not sure. I think
probably about a set of 10 to 12 around about Christmas if we can, but it's a lot of information to collect.
And it also has to be correct, because it's not only us projecting what we think is the situation, we also need to get agreement for the people who are providing that information.
So a very quick question. Is there any correlation between the countries that are already using XBRL and the sort of feedback that you get in exposure drives? Is that of interest?
I would say
the answer is you'd have to say no, probably, because we actually don't get much feedback on the exposure drafts. So I think we got 3 letters or 2 letters last time. So the data set's so small that you really can't say much about it. We're hoping that this will actually help. And it's not just comment letters, but also the more this interaction actually helps improve the dialogue between us and the regulators. So, and that's just as powerful as a tool for getting feedback as the formal comment letter process.
So this next slide just gives you a sort of an overview of where we're at. So we've done the limited testing, the survey, and pre-questions to standard setters, and we're just redeveloping the survey based on that work we've already done. We hope to get that out very shortly, I think, and we'll roll that out, I think, based on some of the responses to the pre-questionnaire, and then we'll start analysing them.
It's fascinating because, as Christy said, we start with the filing requirements. So you've got a set of financial statements. What happens to them? You know, it's chucked in a drawer or filed or whatever. Different countries are so different. Like the two I just give is some of the first two came back were not from Asia, but South Africa. They have to file it within 6 months. But if they don't file within 6 months, they've got to give an interim report after 3 months, explaining when they're likely to be able to file. And it's electronic, normally PDF. You go to New Zealand, for example, and it's 3 months, and within 3 months, the same day that goes to investors. It is electronic, but again, it's a PDF format, and it's not even that clear how consistent the PDF filings are, for example. And you go to other jurisdictions, and it's an XBRL or other structured data format. So the length of time between end of a fiscal year and when the information's available to investors can vary from, typically it looks like 3 to 6 months, and the mechanisms for filing and your ability to access the data are quite different around the jurisdictions. And so we're trying to understand that general process, and then obviously if somebody is using XBRL for tax purposes, it's a lot easier to persuade them to take that little extra step to get them into the capture for financial reporting. So that's why we're trying to build a much better, broader profile of all the jurisdictions.
Christy, would you be able to give us a brief update on who these jurisdictions are from the previous slide? The 8 jurisdictions, the 2, 1, 3.
The first 10 or so?
Not the 8, not the 18. So the three responses received were Japan, China, and Taiwan. So they're the ones we've actually received. In terms of the fourth one, is Korea, I think, is still up there.
If I can come back at a break, I can look up quickly. We've got 12 drafts sitting in our shared drives, and I can look at the names. New Zealand and South Africa are two more on there, but we didn't. I think the US actually might be one that we've started to put the documentation together for as well.
Yeah,
so we've got the core Asia plus a few others. In designing our document for reporting, we try to get as a wider range of use as possible, from those who have no requirements to some that are fully embedded with the XBRL. So it was like the SEC versus those that have multiple filing bodies and New Zealand that has no XBRL projects at all. Mm-hmm. So to get a sensible reporting mechanism.
Thank you.
So the next section is, and I'm conscious that I've got 5 minutes to get through these, so the next section is intellectual property and licensing of the IFRS taxonomy. And a number of reasons made us start to look at this. I think some bit broader IP work that we're doing in the IFRS Foundation more broadly was definitely one of the reasons for looking at this, but I think also the fact that the IFRS taxonomy at the moment is free of charge, and I don't think we necessarily have any plans to change that, but I think in terms of the existing terms and conditions on our websites, I think they're quite difficult to find and they're not necessarily up to date. So we also have separate licensing contracts for our translations of the taxonomy, and we also have an interaction with the way XBRL international license works, and we need to keep what the IFRS taxonomy content aspect of that sort of separate from the XBRL sort of licensing as well. So a number of that's the current situation. As I mentioned, the things that have sort of led us to look at this. Even though it is free of charge, we do want to try and promote good use of the IFRS taxonomy, and we feel like having more sort of transparent, up-to-date terms and conditions could help us achieve that. We want to encourage its best use, upgrade, if we can, get people to upgrade to more current versions of the taxonomy, and also get a sense of who's using the IFRS taxonomy. At the moment, people can go download and we have no sense of who that is. We also want to try, if we can, to prevent inappropriate use, so, you know, claiming that something's IFRS compatibility without without a basis, copying some of our elements, etc., and use without informing us that they're doing so. So really it's about trying to protect our rights and our reputation. In terms of how we might do that, we want to develop some new terms and conditions that we'd hope users would have to register and log on, a bit like I think the FASB do on their website when you get to go to the standards. So we can keep a track, and people are very clear about what terms and conditions they need to respond to when using the taxonomy. We've also going to look into trademarking the use of the term IFRS taxonomy, and that's supposed to be on the front of some of our documentation already. And we also want to make sure we use the IFRS taxonomy consistently in terms of both name and brand, and make sure we kind of separate a little bit from just in terms of terminology from the XBRL. Oh.
There's an interesting statement, include a requirement to update the latest versions.
I think it's more, it's definitely not asking you have to update to the latest version of the taxonomy, but we would prefer that people update to more recent versions. So what we wouldn't want to see is somebody say using a 2005 version of the IFRS. I don't even know if the 2005 version existed, but a very out of date version of the taxonomy, which actually doesn't even reflect current IFRS. And is there any way that we could try and promote them to upgrade it? I'm not necessarily sure we would prevent people using it if they want to continue to use it, but maybe they'd have to have a discussion with us before they continue to use it. At the moment, I think it's just only available on our website. I think our preference would be that at least they have some discussion before going to something which is, I think, clearly out of date and maybe clearly not in line with current IFRS.
I was wondering how you will enforce it, or how you will educate the market around this. Strong statement.
I suppose maybe include a requirement to update to latest versions. I think it would be a sort of an undertaking that you would do if could, and we would, and we haven't. This is just something we've talked about. I'm not sure whether we would implement it, but to what extent would we continue to have older versions freely available? I think we would make them freely available and we could give them to people, but just being on the website where we think they're clearly no longer reflecting current IFRS.
And it's a health warning as well. You mentioned the US, for example, once the revenue recognition standard comes in, completely new set of disclosure requirements. And the SEC decided, we'll just use the old taxonomy, and we've got a brand new standard. It's very difficult then for anybody to say that what you've captured in XBRL actually reflects current reporting requirements. Yeah. And so if somebody's using an out-of-date taxonomy, we don't want them asserting that it reflects current reporting requirements. And that's the issue problem we're going to deal with. Yeah. And right, it's difficult saying, beating them with a stick saying you have to update. We're trying to get people to understand that if you don't update, you get out of sync with the financial reporting requirements, because they're linked.
Isn't it largely up to the regulators to enforce that?
And it's the regulators who use the taxonomy as well. So we want there are some regulators, and this is what the jurisdictional profiles are starting to show, I think, as well. Some of the regulators are using older versions of the taxonomy. So we're trying to understand what version of IFRS they're using and then what version of the taxonomy. And it's when you get the gaps, there's an issue we have to deal with.
Just if I could chime in here, at an FEI conference 2 years ago in New York, I was speaking to a number of data vendors who push and promote XBRL products, and I asked them, what is one of the major, or two or three major obstacles in the way of uptake among your clients to XBRL information? And they said, number one,
companies do not use the most recent taxonomies. In addition to data errors, input errors, but not using the most current taxonomy was one of the reasons why, you know, investors and companies just build their own databases. They don't have the confidence that what they're getting is going to reflect the most recent disclosures. I was surprised to hear that too. But this was Bloomberg and this was Thomson Reuters, who I was talking to, who had their own kind of booths, you know, at the FEI conference. And I specifically went up to each one of them and asked them, because this was something that was puzzling me. What's the issue here?
Those are data vendors that update their taxonomies once every 5 years.
Yeah. So it's an issue, and I think you put you hit the nail on the head, Lewis. I think it is up to the regulators to ensure.
But you have to work closely with the regulators.
Yeah.
It's Doug from Australia here. I wonder if sorry to chime in. I was wondering if I could ask a question about this, and I suspect it will become clearer when the registration process is there and the, you know, detailed terms and conditions are available. But I can imagine that a lot of regulators wouldn't be using the taxonomy exactly as it's published. I mean, put aside extensions, I assume that's not an issue where you've got extensions for additional disclosure requirements outside the standards, but I could imagine it could be minor architecture differences or whatever. So I guess those sorts of things might be accommodated, but I'm just not sure from your own surveys and so forth, you know, how many are actually using the taxonomy 100% exactly as it's published.
Yeah, and I think that's a good point, and that's something that we, in our discussions with our legal staff, we need to make sure that that use by regulators is permitted, because, you know, we're not here to sort of say that you can't sort of, you know, make amendments to the taxonomy to sort of update for your own architecture, etc. So we have to make sure the terms and conditions support what we think is appropriate use, and to enable the different ways that a regulator may actually adopt the taxonomy.
If I may, two things to feed in. And the first is that we must acknowledge, acknowledge that there are the 2009 edition and the 2010 edition of the IFRS taxonomy are still in extensive use for national mandatory filing requirements. And my second point is completely different, is that from a taxonomy maintenance perspective, it's very, very difficult and at high cost to re-underpin a national extension with a new IFRS taxonomy. And that's part because of the lack of tooling to be able to support that process.
We do work with a few regulators, and our sense is that the regulators are not looking at annual updation. This is they use a taxonomy with other elements as well. It's essentially IFRS taxonomy supplemented by other elements. So the cost is fairly onerous. But what would help is if the regulators are kept communicated about the changes in the new versions of taxonomy, say they know where the impact lies. That communication also right now is not really there.
And so I said, we're not proposing that we require entities to update every single time that we update the taxonomy or even on an annual basis, but I think we just want to get a better sense of, one, encouraging perhaps update when it's appropriate, and then also to make sure that where we feel that the taxonomy perhaps is getting so out of date that we can maybe have something a bit more, I'm not going to say forcible, but you know, we can have maybe have a direct discussion with people using them to why they want to use it, and is there any ability to update something more. But I'm not sure we prevent people using anything. Unless it's inappropriate.
I would actually go even stronger. I mean, I agree with Kylie on the first point, and definitely there are still users of 2005 taxonomy and 2006 taxonomies out there, and 2008 and 9. And if you just think for a second, these taxonomies are 10 years old, so they reflect actually IFRS as they were in 2003, 4, maybe 5, and then 2007. So I would actually say it is very positive to discourage use. I mean, if we're talking about the 2012, 13, maybe 11, fine, but we are talking about the 2007, 8, and I disagree highly with your second point. I mean, so what? If it's difficult to underpin the latest taxonomy, there's no reason for, I think, for ISB to say, well, you should be using outdated IFRSs in a sense. So that's, I would put a stronger message there, not to prohibit, because it's impossible to prohibit, but to clearly discourage. And I'm not sure if there can be some cutback to say, you know, I mean, the taxonomy is going, definitely 2005, 2006, different architecture, completely new, old world. The one that we released 2008 was the revamped one. And then there was another jump when we started to release the common practice item. So I mean, I think there are kind of three generations. And to be frank, I would say the last generation with the common practice, so everything what was included is the one that would be allowable for me. All the others are simply too old. And that's, I fully agree with the message. I would just put it even stronger that it's discouraged to be used.
And we have to make it easy.
Yeah.
It's the other thing to work on, make it easier. Krishnan's point. By giving updates regularly, we're signalling well in advance of the standard becoming mandatory that this is the change and these are the elements that change. So it's not a brand new taxonomy every time you have to work out which things have changed. We're giving you feeding bit by bit. That's the idea.
So just in terms of next steps, I think there's going to be a lot of work on what actually these terms and conditions. Oh, sorry.
No, just one quick comment on this change and update process. The case of South Africa and the case of Malaysia, where bodies like MASB, when they endorse the new IFRSs, they take certain time for this endorsement process. Do we have any consideration to align these promotion of new updates of the taxonomy with this endorsement process of the IFRS themselves? Whenever new standard appears, MASB takes certain time in order to review the standard and endorse it in Malaysia, for instance. Similar process happening in South Africa. If we were to recommend to them as prompt update of the IFRS taxonomy, which they already signaled that they want to use, would this be aligned with the endorsement process of IFRSs? Would we consider certain alignment between those two processes?
Well, I think that the taxonomy already allows it. So you'll have the old version, the old elements relating to the previous standard, and you also have the new one. So if you're in a position where a standard is effective, so it's been published, and so you can early adopt that, and IFRS allows you, that new element for the new standard is already in the taxonomy, but it still means that you could be using because you haven't early adopted, and the other standard isn't effective yet. And when we set the effective dates, we take into consideration the fact that certain standards will take longer to update, then that older, but basically both those elements will stay in there to one becomes.
I was thinking maybe we should consider including in this due process an element of technically extending the IFRS taxonomy, just creating this technical update of the extension as part of this due process, because there's a certain time that is required, regardless of the decisions on the accounting side. There is a certain time required to update the technical taxonomy as well. And now, depending on the architecture of the extension taxonomy of IFRS is applied in the different countries, it may take longer or shorter. If we are about to recommend as quick update as possible, we probably should also encourage them to build into this process the timeline for this technical extension.
Okay. So with that, in effect, extend the effective date of the IFRS.
So that's where I'm going. We may require, or the regulators may require, a little bit more time in case they are adopting the technology as well, just to align the structures, the architectures.
I mean, we wouldn't be, to some extent, if a jurisdiction didn't feel they were ready to move to, say, the 2015 taxonomy, because they still had the 2014. And they hadn't adopted, the amendments to the 2015 yet in IFRS itself. I assume, I'm not sure we would be perturbed by them still using the 2014. I think where we're really concerned is like Maciej was saying, with people using the 2005 or the 2006 version, where it's very incompatible. I think it's to a certain extent, going back a certain year to concern. But I think if you were still having a standard, I think you'd keep the version until the IFRS was implemented and then moved to the new. Okay, so I think this is all very clear that we'll need to spend a lot of time making sure these terms and conditions are very well drafted and reflect the needs of people who will use the taxonomy and also protect what we're trying to achieve. So let me quickly, just very quickly, get on to data modelling, just to give you a very quick update. I see Lewis here is most probably a better expert on this than I am, but we did want to start some work on data modelling for the taxonomy. At the moment, the taxonomy data model is disclosure and presentation based, so it follows the standards and the disclosure and presentation structure of the standards themselves. It's XBRL based, it's partly dimensional, and it's not documented outside of the taxonomy. So we undertook a joint trial project with the FASB, which I think is still going. We're trying to get the next meeting. Scheduling is always difficult. And we started by looking at IFRS 13 on fair value measurement. And in part of that, what we tried to do was to identify the important terms and properties of the items within IFRS 13, and to see if we could identify those particular terms and the relationships, and to see if that could work out to be a data model that we could use. I think what we felt was the process was very beneficial, and we could make a good model, but what we think was sort of the outcome was that we should look more at the fundamental concepts. So we were starting at IFRS 13 as a test case, but what we really thought is let's look more at some underlying concepts like the conceptual basis level. So what are assets, liabilities, income and expense, and work down from there. And it's from there that you can actually build perhaps a more cohesive model. So I think that's our next step in this data modelling project, is to really, let me just move here, sort of look more at the conceptual framework considerations rather than a particular standard, because I think once you look at those sort of underlying concepts, you can build the model from that basis. Lewis, if you had any more to add on that. It's definitely a work in process, and it's a thinking process.
It's very much a work in process, and it's an exercise to really, from my perspective, what we want to get out of it is a more consistent reference model that is an articulation of the conceptual framework from a data modeling perspective. So everything we do here should link back to the conceptual framework and should help us do a better job of modeling what we have to build into the taxonomies. And I think it will also help us better identify what's common in what we're doing and help cut through some of the differences that we typically run into in the past. So it's a little slow going because we have day jobs when we're trying to do this stuff, but it's really an important part of our efforts. So.
A really interesting point is that a sort of similar exercise when we have a conceptual framework project undergoing at the moment, and actually we brought in Andy when we were discussing some of the underlying elements from the technical perspective, so to sort of help us model our descriptions of assets and liabilities and be very precise with the language. So this work that we've been doing here is very much similar, parallel to that same thinking. It shows that actually we could have had that whole discussion with the technical teams and the taxonomy teams together, because they really were getting a precision of language and data model. It should apply whether you're doing the standard or the taxonomy.
Right.
I'll just quickly move on to our education materials, and just to let you know that the current focus is on publication of our other IFRS taxonomy guides, so extending the IFRS taxonomy, and I think we're going to talk a bit more about that, and drafting a common practice explained in more depth. And we're also looking to revamp our website, which is taking a bit of time, but we think could update. So that's all from my perspective, because I notice I've run 5 minutes over.
I think we're in more case of time. We could take one or two questions. Yes, Chief, you have a question?
I have questions about the jurisdiction profile. I would like to just make sure the end of, intellectual property and licensing, the IFRS taxonomy, the end of this slide. Next step is, my understanding, currently there is no contract between the jurisdiction and IFRS using IFRS taxonomy. Do you have some kind of contract basis, contract fees?
Well, I think technically there's terms and conditions for the use of the IFRS taxonomy. It's not very explicit, but there are some, and I think we wanted to make that just more obvious that those exist. So I don't know if by accepting those terms and conditions, I don't know whether you legally call that a contract, but there's not like a contract that we do, say, with translations where we sign it, but by ultimately accepting certain terms and conditions, you are entering into a sort of a legal arrangement. But that would be the extent of the contract.
So just have a communication within that.
Yeah, it's really making it, they exist already, we think they're out of date, and they're not very easy to find. We just want to make that more transparent, that when you have a taxonomy, you are accepting certain conditions about that use.
Thank you, Christy.
Question?
Yeah, you'd be number two.
For the IFRS documentation guides, I have one question. XI has published also implementation guidance on taxonomies. Will that be used or referenced to within this document also? From the implementation guidance task force? Not familiar? Well, then.
Not familiar. Oh, Andy will step in here. Basically,
our documentation guides are aimed very specifically at IFRS users. Mm-hmm. So where we are talking about anything particularly specific for taxonomy architecture, we'll make sure that we know what's going on with the XII guides, the Experian International guides, and make sure that what we're doing is up to date with current practice. From that perspective, but most of the guides that we're producing at the moment are less technical than that. To some extent, they're aimed more at helping people use the taxonomy overall. So where necessary, we'll make sure we're up to date, but there probably won't be too many direct references from one set of material to the other, apart from obviously a reference that says, if you need to know more about Experian in general, go and talk to Experian International on the Experian website.
Okay.
Yeah. Thanks again, Christy. Before we move on to the next agenda item, do you want to spend a couple of minutes on your topic?
Yeah, there's just one little issue, and I'll try and say that very positively. I'm a little concerned now and again. I just hear messages that we're walking away from XBRL and not committed to XBRL as a data exchange concept. I was away last week and meeting with the balance sheet people, and one of the points I made there is that, and there's so much inconsistency. I think of their agenda papers, there are about 150 references to IFRS in there because standards are so critical to them. And to compare information and data, you need at least three things. You need to have a common standard like IFRS. If you're going to capture data in a structured manner, you need a taxonomy that's consistently applied and used. So that's our taxonomy. Then you have to have a data exchange platform. And XBRL is a platform we're committed to using. But what we're also seeing is that some regulators and users don't necessarily need to capture all of the financial reports, for example. They're not trying to capture IFRS financial statements. They're trying to pull some data out of it, for example. And others who are newer to the game of structured data are struggling because it is a pretty big leap to go to full XBRL and full capture of everything that the SEC's experienced, taking a while to get there, with all the notes and so on. And so creating a pathway which is kind of like, simplified, I don't like to use the term simplified, it's very sensitive, it sounds like we've got a dumbing down XBRL, but providing pathways that allow people to start to capture some data without necessarily having to pick up all of the X-Link aspects of it, so they don't necessarily have to do all the calculation link bases or presentation link bases, but being able to draw from it, but still consistent with XBRL philosophy, and on that pathway to full XBRL, we think that could be helpful, because if it gets people on the journey, they'll start to actually require, as the US did, I think you started off capturing balance sheets and income statements and accounting policies, I think were the three. That's, your core, and then you start to move out into the notes and so on. In a way, what we're doing is providing a simpler structure to get there. So we're having a look at ways to describe that and help support through our taxonomy, ways to get people onto this particular journey. My concern, which sounds a bit negative, is that's for some people, that sounds like we're walking away from XBRL, and we're not. I just want to make, I don't know if there's any impression people have about that, and whether you support the idea of actually helping people along this journey, but that's what we're looking at doing within the team as well.
Well, I think at some point we'll have to face this discussion as well, because, if you think for a second, XBRL is a technology which is, 16 years old? So the question is to which, I mean, there was no major revamp of this technology since 2003. So there is a topic for XBRL International in general on you know, XBRL and where it's going toward, and it's a topic also for the ISB, to which extent the technology that is underpinning the IFRS taxonomy is the right one. So I think looking into the future, I think currently XBRL is de facto standard for most of these use cases, but looking into, you know, 5 to 10 years from now, it's a very legitimate question, you know, including course. I think at some point, probably not today, we should facilitate such a discussion, you know, where the structured disclosure according to the IFRSs should be 5 years from now. And I'm not so sure if the answer is definitely the XBRL as we know it today. Because, you know, this whole X-Link and whatever we have as a technical artifact, I mean, they are really old. So this is not the top-notch technology that we are talking about. And that's probably not really suiting the way how maybe IFRS wants to be seen in 2020. So that's, I think, I agree where you stand right now, but I think at some point it would probably be worth to have a small brainstorming session, you know, where this should go in the future and what should be the 2020 objective.
As a standard setter, we need to be mindful of all of the different ways data is used, and XBRL is just one mechanism for that. So our core responsibility is really to understand how the information needs to be conveyed, how it's being consumed, and whatever comes in the future, whatever technology comes in the future, we hope to be able to handle it. So XBRL is just the flavor of the day, frankly, and you know, marketing, whatever it is, can't stand in the way of what we need to be thinking about going forward.
Any other comments before we move on to the member updates? Okay, so we have the one member, just the one member update.
Two, I think.
Two?
Roxana, no, three for this one, Roxana, from the SSC, and Kato will give a short update on the
purpose of the Okay. And can we start with you, Roxana?
Yes. Good morning, everybody. So in terms of updates, I will be quite quick. Probably most of you know that ESMA has